The following programming is sponsored by BFG LLC. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
Good morning, good afternoon. Welcome to Conversation Unplugged on WWDB 860 AM in the city of brotherly love and sisterly affection. My name is Reverend Dr. Wayne M. Weathers, blessed to be host of the show with my co-host, my brothers in Christ, Bishop Dr. Kevin Aiken, as well as Pastor Robert Johnson. Hello. You've been Hello. You've been selected to pick cotton at the nearest plantation. Be ready at 12 a.m. January 4, 2025, sharp with your belongings. Our exclusive slaves will come get you in a brown van. Be prepared to be searched upon arrival to the plantation. No personal belongings allowed. This is a fresh start. Thank you for your time and cooperation. Sincerely, the American Slave Corporate. These text messages has been hitting African-American children in our country after the election. One of my pastoral colleagues, one of our pastoral colleagues in York, PA, shared it on Facebook yesterday. And then in a family chat, group family chat on my wife's side of the family, we were sent this particular text message because in the DMV, Washington, Maryland, Virginia, Northern Virginia area, these particular text messages have been going out after the election. Let's talk about it. Got our butts kicked. Let me say that again. Got our butts kicked. What's your thoughts about the election, Pastor Johnson, Bishop Aiken, Texas, that just went out? Talk to me, man.
Is anybody really surprised? I was disappointed at the election, but I wasn't surprised.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't surprised because the hope against hope was that she was going to win. But as we know, America is not yet ready for a woman to be the commander-in-chief. And we know that they were not going to pick a woman of color. And the racism, misogynistic, the whole gamut of whatever you want to put next to this election has everything to do with people's fear of the other.
Mm-hmm.
And their fear of some folk in the white world losing their place of supremacy. This election showed me two things. It showed me that, number one, it showed we have to do a better job at educating the electorate. And number two, we have to do a better job of mobilizing in an area that we have not mobilized before, coalescing, if you will, of getting people from different backgrounds, different ethnicities together in one room and educating them on what issues are to their best interest and not vote against their best interests because they're misinformed.
Bishop, talk to us, man. You're on mute, Bishop. There you go.
I was hopeful. Reality still kicks in. That we've gone and we've traveled far, but yet we're running in place. You know, we're finding that the hope that we have often is layered with a lot of fluff.
Mm.
A lot of stuff that we lose the reality of where we are. Mm-hmm. And I think when we really look at it, and if we're really smart, and I say intelligent, we would look at the trajectory and the course and the path that one has taken. And then it speaks to where we are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we know already that, as my brother mentioned, that America was not ready for a woman of color, as well as for a woman itself, to be commander in chief. We were hopeful for all of that, and we were really hopeful for that. However, when you look at the chips and the things that were stacked, it was a lot of chips and things were stacked against her. And I believe that she ran and fought a very, very rough and tedious and a very strategic campaign. And so for that, you know, you give kudos to that, you know, because you don't know what you don't know until mm-hmm. you come up to the point of the reality and it hits you. However, you know, some of the things that we have, you know, and I say hopeful because everybody already said their gut feeling when the things shifted, and I say leadership shifted based on where we were, and then the baton was passed to the vice president. The gut feelings on that Sunday was it ain't gonna work. I mean, that's the exact, you know, it's not gonna work. It's not gonna work. But then the hopefulness came in. And based on the hopefulness that came in, it was saying, hey, we can still give it a good run. That's exactly what happened. It was a good run, a good fight.
Wow. So there's a multiplicity of things that's going through my head at this particular time, and I don't know if we're going to do any station breaks today. And there's some things I'm going to say, and then there's some things I'm going to hold off on and refer it to our podcast format because, you know, there's some things I'm getting ready to say, and I have some colleagues that are closing out their books with the campaign and everything. And so I don't want to come across – I would never say anything that would be disparaging to them or anything like that, but I would never – want to say something like, you're taking your jabs now that after the campaign is over with. Her loss is a multiplicity of things. I do agree with you, Bishop Aiken, as well as Pastor Johnson, that America wasn't ready for a woman as well as an African-American woman to be president of the United States. But if we look at through that lens and that lens only, then we are going to miss other components that stopped her from being elected. And working the campaign, there's a lot that I saw. So for those who are listening, I was a consultant with the Pennsylvania Democratic Party. So and as well as being a consultant with the Pennsylvania Democratic Party, I was blessed to be asked to sit on a committee, a volunteer committee at the headquarters level, never made it to the actual headquarters in Wilmington, but at the headquarters level where maybe 7 to 10 of us who worked on former campaigns, myself, Biden, Harris, others, Obama, you know, et cetera, others, Hillary Clinton, we all came together to strategize. And I'll tell you why we was asked to come together to strategize in a few minutes. And, you know, things that I was observing in that particular context and everything. Let me just tell you, it was a chaotic campaign to an extent. It was chaotic. And the chaos was not Kamala Harris. She inherited what was put together. I will give just a sneak preview of what I'll say in the podcast format. This is what baffled me about this campaign. This is what baffled me. What baffled me about this campaign is the infrastructure that they had in place 4 years ago, which was a well-oiled machine. You hear me? Infrastructure they had in place 4 years ago was not the infrastructure they had in place this last go around. And there were missed opportunities. And so there was just missed opportunities. And there comes a point where credit to the Republican Party. You got me? Credit to the Republican Party. Democrats got out-strategized. Straight up. Out-strategized. And someone said, are you shifting your thoughts? No, because as a competitor, right, we get so caught up into the emotionalism that we can't step back and look at what did the other party do that we did not do? You follow me? What did they do that they did not do? Like, case in point, I called my colleague, we know him, Cook, Pastor Cook in Erie, PA, right? And I called him yesterday. Was it yesterday? Yeah, yesterday. I called him yesterday and I was like, yo, man, help me out, man. Give me some insight. How did Erie flip from being red in 2016, blue in 2020, back to red in 2024? And this is what Cook said to me. Cook said to me, he said, Weathers, he said, let me tell you something. When Trump lost in 2020, his exact words were, Republicans started working right after he lost. And he said, so they were planning, working, and building from 2020 up until now. He said, so they've been working at this for 4 years. Now, catch this. He says, so as they're working at it for 4 years, if you don't show up until September, which is 3 months, right, before the election, then you're already at a deficit because you're just showing up a few months before the election is taking place. But they've been working at this for 4 years. Got out-strategized. Period. Out-strategize. I remember hearing reports. So one of my church members works for SEIU, 32BJ, and she, you know, was doing work in Pittsburgh. And there's another colleague of mine, you know, Will Anderson. We, you know, we interviewed him. At that time, it was Brothers for Biden. Then it switched for Harris for Biden. And both of them don't know each other. Will's from Pittsburgh. My church member is not from Pittsburgh. And I remember her saying, Pastor, there are Trump signs everywhere, but there isn't hardly any Harris Waltz signs. You follow me? And I remember Will saying to me, yo, man, he was like, they better get it together. That's what Will said. Will said to me as I'm a consultant, he says, yo, man, they better get it together. He said, man, Trump got buses going into the I want folks to hear this. He said Trump got buses going into the projects, knocking on doors, registering folks, passing out his literature, hitting the African-American community to get folks to come out and vote for him. And he says, Weathers, I'm looking for how can I get Harris Waltz signs? And I can't hardly get in. And he's part of the Democratic Party. They got out-strategized. Out-strategize, period. And if we just look at it through the lens of America wasn't ready for a black woman, AAPI woman, to be president, and I still believe that, and I do not negate it, and I won't push away from that position, but there are other multifaceted reasons why she lost. And we really got to examine the direction of the Democratic Party, because the direction that the Democratic Party is going, they're losing black men, they're losing Latinx, and there's a new generation that's emerging that are not post-civil rights. We're post-civil rights. We're Generation X, right? We're post-civil rights. Our loyalty is to the Democratic Party, and I'm starting to question my loyalty. I'm going to be very candid with you. I'm starting to question my loyalty, not because we lost, but I'm starting to question my loyalty. Is it time to become an independent, right? Or do I still stay with a party that I believed in because of Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King? That's why I joined the Democratic Party. And in full transparency, you know, when I was 19, I was Republican. Because living in Delaware County, I was taught by my family that after I graduated from college, if you want to get a college, if you want to get a city or county job, that you need to be Republican. So 1987, after hearing Jesse Jackson speak, after I participated in my first civil rights march, I was Republican. Didn't vote. You know what I mean? Didn't vote. But I was Republican from 87 to 92. Here's the kicker, and then I'm going to kick it back to the co-host. Reason why I joined the Democratic Party, because I found somebody that I could connect with, not personally, Bill Clinton, because his theme was the comeback kid, right? That's when he lost in the primary in New York. No, I think he won the primary in New York after losing a couple of primaries. And his theme was the comeback kid. And I remember hearing that theme and I was like, yo, I can connect with that, because anytime I get knocked down, I'm always coming back. You know, I didn't know his policies. I didn't know anything about Bill Clinton. It's just they start calling him the comeback kid. And that's what's happening with young African-Americans now, because they've been left out, disenfranchised, not reached out to, et cetera. Trump now is going to low propensity areas and reaching those that the Democratic Party chooses not to reach out to. And because they choose not to reach out to, he's catching them. Let's do this. I know I said I wasn't going to go on a station break. Let's just take a quick whoosh off a moment. Let's go on a 30-second station break conversation. Unplugged, WWDB 860 AM in the city of brotherly love and sisterly affection. Let's go on a 30-second station break. Hi, this is Reverend Dr. Wayne M. Weathers. Not only am I the radio show host of Conversation Unplugged, but I'm also a life coach with BFG LLC. BFG means Bound for Greatness. As a life coach, what I do is I coach people to the goals and objectives that they would like to obtain. Whether you're a business entrepreneur, whether you're just trying to figure out certain things in life, utilize my services. Give me a call, 484-324-8397. Let's have a consultation so I can be your life coach so that you can achieve greatness that you're bound to get. Take care. We're back on Conversation Unplugged on WWDB 860 AM in the city of brotherly love and sisterly affection. Let's lighten up the moment before we get deeper, right? Let's just lighten up the moment real quick before we get deeper. Bishop Akins, I just got to ask you a question. Did the Minnesota Vikings win this past Sunday?
Yes, we did.
Never mind. We just got heavy. Let's move on. For those who don't know, Pastor Johnson is a Minnesota Vikings fan. Oh, y'all lost last week. Okay. All right. So y'all got saving grace. All right. But we did win. Yeah, we did win. Yeah, I saw Barkley do, he jumped over the player, man. When he jumped over that player, I held up a sign, 10, 10, 10. Let me stop and get back. What's your thoughts about this whole election, Democratic Party? Are they failing African Americans? Are they taking us for granted? And the reason why I ask that question, I'm really giving you a whole bunch of preludes to what I plan to talk about podcast next week, because there's a lot that I got to say. There's a lot that I have to say. I remember let me give the preface of why I raised this question. Because one of my colleagues who worked with me on the campaign on the, you know, Harris side at the national headquarters, that is, he said all of the money was pumped to white women, thinking they were going to be the key for Kamala's success, and a good portion of them didn't vote for her. But when we were asking them to invest in our churches and in our communities, they didn't invest in us. Or if they did, it was minute and in a robust way. And I was sitting in a meeting this morning, and I think they said it was like 15 million African-Americans throughout the country. I think they said 15 million didn't vote or didn't vote for her. 15 million. Are they taking us for granted? What's your thoughts, Bishop? What's your thoughts, Johnson? Whoever want to go first. I don't want to. Y'all can decide who can go first.
One of the things that you mentioned about strategies, you know, and I got stuck more so on the strategy, the campaign strategy, you know, the effectiveness of it, you know, exactly the direction that it was going in, the messaging, the outreach, the connectivity. All the above, you know, and the shadow, of course, that she was actually coming behind.
Mm-hmm.
All those things became, I guess, factors. And when you really look at it, and you know, not trying to play Monday night quarterback, because that's something that don't want to do. But the thing that sticks to me as far as what was being said, you mentioned something. You said that the campaign itself was, you didn't use these words, but chaotic.
Mm-hmm.
They were not, there was no order, you know, there were disorder. You know, opposed to, of course, compared to Biden's 4 years ago,
yes,
where there was pretty much an order to things or what have you. We all know that if you have a poor strategy, you know, you get poor results.
Or peed,
you know,
on.
The biggest thing is that, you know.
You know, peed, you know, on. The, yeah.
Yeah. The voter turnout, you know, I'm going to say something that I said to my daughter. I said, you know, one thing is that there was the strategy in a sense and the conversation that went. And I don't know if you all picked up on it. There was a conversation that had that said that, hey, when you go into the booth, you remember, you know, your spouse is not there. You can you can vote. Yeah. You can vote for, you know, whoever your party is. Well, I think America came back and took that advice.
Mm.
And they went into the voter booth and they voted.
Yeah, they did.
And whoever had the face of being a part and saying yes came out of that voter booth. And, you know, if there was a pulling of a lever, if we want to proverbially say that, the lever was pulled, you know, for the Republican.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and so just the idea of strategy that if you're going to say something, be very careful what you say.
Mm-hmm.
And I just believe that, and we saw it on Tuesday when we looked at the votes, look at the electoral college votes, and we seen the actual mountain that had to be overcame. We the reality started sitting in very early.
Mm-hmm.
That this here is something that we gotta look at.
Yeah. Johnson, your thoughts? There's a whole multiplicity of things I could say. I don't want to dominate the mic.
Well, I think that here's a couple of things that we need to think about. We need to. She did not have a traditional run up to the election.
Yep. Can you pause?
She did not have a traditional.
Can you pause right there? Pastor Andrew James out of Columbia, Maryland. He's from North Philadelphia. I used to be his pastor. Andrew James says, and I want to chime in what you just said just for a quick 2 to 5 seconds. His exact words on Facebook, on my Facebook page is, he says 107 days versus 4 years. Go ahead, Pastor Johnson. Sorry to cut you off like that.
So she did not have a traditional run-up. And so that put her at a disadvantage of really getting her voice out there. That was number one. Number two, the second thing is that somebody has got to look at this election from the Democratic National Committee and ask the question, are we really serving the cause of Democratic voters? Well, meaning that we're going to the same wells and finding that the wells are dry. Vast majority of our young people are not in church. And you're hitting churches which you have older people who are Democrats who are going to vote Democratic anyway. But we're not catching the minds and the imaginations of young people who are saying, why should I vote? And, you know, one of the things that I learned when I was serving with Governor Wolf, former governor of Pennsylvania, But the young people were disenfranchised with the voting process mm-hmm. because they feel that their votes didn't matter and that the candidate was liars.
Mm-hmm.
And we're missing a whole two generations of people who are not plugged into the democratic process because A, they don't believe their votes count, and two, nobody's speaking for them.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we as Democrats or independents begin to look at how we capture the imaginations of the next voter class, because there's going to be a next 4 years, there's going to be another voter class coming in. And that next voter class is going to feel like this voter class felt, that, hey, you know, is our votes going to count? We can't get mad. We can't get mad when we get our butts kicked because we haven't done our research. And we should listen, just as Donald Trump's group did it when after the 2020 election, we ought to be doing it now. And we ought to be strategizing. And we ought to be mobilizing. And we ought to be looking at this thing from the standpoint of saying, A, let's identify some candidates. Who is the person that's going to be the face of the Democratic Party now? Donald Trump, for the past 8 years,
longer than
12
that.
Years, has been the face of the Republican Party. He has wielded power even when he was out of office. And we scramble every 4 years trying to find somebody and put them in place to be the face. I got news for you. If he wanted it, and if he needed it, Barack Obama could have been the face of the Democratic Party still, because he still wielded that type of power. But because we relegate ourselves to the traditional forms that aren't working, the traditional taglines that aren't working, we're not meeting voters where they are, especially young voters. And I'm with you, Dr. Weathers. I, too, am looking at the fact of whether or not I'm going to stay Democrat or go independent.
Mm-hmm.
Because right now, the Democratic Party is a face I don't recognize and a voice I don't hear.
And Pastor,
and they're becoming passé.
Sorry about that. And Pastor Johnson, you're not the only pastor that has said this to me. One pastor told me, and I want to read some comments on Facebook from my sorority sister, Gina Pridgen out of North Carolina, and then Will Anderson. I'm not used to calling you William, but Will Anderson out of Pittsburgh has some comments as well. But before I read, I just want to just reiterate. No, I had some colleagues out of, I won't say where, but they said to me, they said, Pastor Weathers, they says, I'm about ready to leave the Democratic Party. One said, the only thing that's stopping me from leaving the Democratic Party is the fact that if I go independent, then I can't vote in the primary. You know, because in Pennsylvania, you either got to be, if you're going to vote for a Republican, you got to be a Republican. If you're going to vote for Democrat, you got to be a Democrat in the primary. And the general election is open. So he said, that's what's stopping me from becoming an independent. Another person said to him, he says, Weathers, he says, I would become a Republican. He says, I would leave the Democratic Party. I would become a Republican. He says, but with this MAGA racist stuff that's going on in a Republican Party, he was like, that's the only reason why I haven't joined. Those are his exact words. So Gina says, she says, preach, Pastor, totally agree. The Democratic Party was out-strategized. The time is now to plan. She says, the Democratic Party is unrecognizable and has gone too far. You say to the right, too far to the left. And she says, I am now an independent for about 6 years. So Gina left the Democratic Party. They went too left. And we want to talk about that in about 2 minutes, at 30 minutes to the hour, going too left. Will said this. They didn't listen. They all need to be fired. And I want to highlight on that. They didn't listen. I'm going to touch on it briefly, and then when we go podcast, I need more time. I can't do it in the time frame that we have here at WWDB, but next week we're going to go podcast and really dig into it, because there's some things that I encountered and saw that I just don't have enough time to talk about it, because we need to talk about the seriousness of the Democratic Party with African Americans, mm-hmm. and I need to just put that out there straight up. And she says, there's no for Kamala Harris when they said 107 days versus 109 days versus 4 years. Will's response is, there's no excuse. She was vice president for 3 years. Now, when Will said they wouldn't listen, absolutely correct. They would not listen. So just a brief, I know I said I'm waiting for the podcast. I'm just going to give y'all just brief brief situation. So check this out. Here's the situation I encountered, right? This is at the HQ level. And I, again, when they say HQ, I'm not flexing muscles. I didn't get paid by HQ. I got something with the Pennsylvania Democratic Party, not at the level of working on a campaign. And how I did not get on the campaign, that's a whole nother story as well. So we get put into this meeting, right? We get into this meeting at the HQ level, and we're talking about surrogates, sending surrogates here, surrogates there, et cetera, et cetera. So I says, okay, so since you want to talk about surrogates, let's talk about the elephant in the room. I said, African-American pastors in the state of Pennsylvania, I hear from them. I said, their complaint is they're not getting touched by Kamala Harris. And I said, I tried to arrange what I call collars and conversation. That is, you know how we do coffee and conversation? So I says, let's do collars and conversation, where we'll have a Zoom meeting throughout the whole entire state. Kamala Harris can address African-American pastors throughout the whole entire state, diverse denominations. We can do collar and conversation. I think I kind of kicked to the side. So they kept saying, oh, she don't have time. She doesn't have time. And then one person says, hey, how about we just get a surrogate and have the surrogate do the virtual meeting with African-American pastors throughout the whole entire state, and that would satisfy it. I says, no, that wouldn't satisfy it. I said, because the pastors don't want to hear from a surrogate. They want to hear from Kamala Harris. So then another person says, well, how about we have this rally and we have, listen to this, we'll have special seatings for African-American pastors and they can sit in this seat, they can sit in these seats while she's speaking at the rally, and then they could feel like they're being touched. And I says, no. I said, black pastors are going to see that as tokenism. And one person raises voice a little bit, and you know, that's a trigger for me. So if you're going to go octave, I'm going to go octave also. And so then the person was like, well, Wayne, she can't touch all African-American pastors in Pennsylvania. And so when you go octave, I'm going to go octave. You know, Michelle says you, when they go low, you go high. Well, they went high and I went high. And so I said, she can't touch all African-American pastors. I said, let me tell you something. I said, y'all told me that. I says, I don't digest that. I don't accept it. And I don't embrace it. I said, y'all told me that crap 4 years ago that Biden didn't have the time to meet with African-American pastors in Philadelphia and throughout the whole entire state. And I said, you know what I did? I said, I went around y'all and got Biden not only to Philadelphia, but to meet and talk with African-Americans throughout the whole entire state, you know, virtually. I said, so don't tell me that she can't touch African-American pastors. I says, I'm not digesting it. I'm not receiving it. And I'm not embracing it. So what they do, instead of having her meet with African-American pastors throughout the whole entire state, they did a major virtual meeting with the battleground states, right? In the battleground states, 3,001 registered, mobilized. And then she did meet with pastors in Philadelphia before the big virtual event. But they only invited 10. Can you let that resonate? They only invited 10. And the one who's busting is behind for the faith community. When they call me up, can you give me a list of churches? Boom, you got it. Can you connect me with a pastor? Boom, you got it. But when they invited the 10, I wasn't included. Boom. Let that resonate for a moment. Let's go on a 30-second station break conversation unplug on WWDB 860 AM in the city of brotherly love and sisterly affection. Let's go on a station break. BFG LLC. BFG means Bound for Greatness. As a life coach, what I do is I coach people to the goals and objectives that they would like to obtain. Whether you're a business entrepreneur, whether you're just trying to figure out certain things in life, utilize my services. Give me a call, 484-324-8397. Let's have a consultation so I can be your life coach so that you can achieve greatness that you're bound to get. Take care. Welcome to Conversation Unplugged on WWDB 860 AM in City of Brotherly Love and Sisterly Affection. We always say, you know, welcome to Philadelphia, Brotherly Love and Sisterly Affection. But I'm also going to say the home of cheesesteaks, chicken cheesesteaks and hoagies and soft pretzels and water rice. Matter of fact, I'm getting ready to end the show because I done got hungry. Hey, how's my host doing? What was very interesting as we, you know, take a turn here, right? Take a turn. And again, for my listeners, if I sound like I'm walking on eggshells, I'm not really. There's just a lot to say, but not in this venue. And it's not that I can't say it on the air. I only have like 55 minutes, and it's a lot that I need to say that 55 minutes won't cover it. But I will advertise when we do, you know, the podcast, because there's just a lot. There's a lot to cover. In 2016, it was the Amish. It was the Amish that came out in record droves in Pennsylvania that gave Trump victory. Amish in 2016. But in 2024, it was the Latinx community. It was the Latinx community, which is now causing ripples and divide now. Because I've been seeing some of the things. I've been watching the news, and right now, I can't watch the news at this point. Latinx, they came out in record droves for Trump. If I'm not mistaken, I think 49% of Puerto Rican men voted for Harris. The rest voted for Trump. And 30%. I think it's a low 40 voted for men, voted for Trump. And then I think 49% of Latino women, Puerto Rican women, voted for Trump. And so I felt bad because I missed an opportunity, but then someone corrected me and said, no, as Will said, Will Anderson, they says, no, don't put that on yourself. We told them and they wouldn't listen. So let me explain. So I was organizing, right? I was organizing in Central PA, to be exact. I was with the Ministers, Baptist Ministers Conference of Central when they first brought me on as a consultant. And so I remember they told me, right? They said, there's a portion of Puerto Ricans that are going to vote for Trump. And I says, really? And they said, yeah. I said, why are they going to vote for Trump? Because of the immigration issue. I says, immigration issue? What do you mean? And he says, they feel like migrants are coming in and taking jobs from them. And it's a concern. And that's why they're voting for Trump. And so in my naivete way of thinking, I said, wait a minute, that doesn't make any sense. This is just a ploy of putting one against another. But it wasn't. You follow me? It wasn't. Another reason why, here's a hard question, which is affecting Black men also. The issue of abortion and same-sex marriage, those are driving forces that caused Puerto Rican community to look past Trump and his racist antics to vote for him. And I'm talking about state of Pennsylvania because Zamora, who we interviewed last week from Puerto Rico and everything, gave us a great insight and was very distraught about the crazy comments Trump made. And so there's a constituency, and I remember one person on the campaign reached out to the Christian Latino community in Allentown, and to his surprise and dismay, he came back with a report and said the campaign, Democratic Party, did not reach out to them. How is that? And yet Trump and the Republicans, they are. But the Democrats are not. Talk to me about it. Johnson, Aiken, which one of y'all want to go first?
I think that still we are looking at a campaign, the DNC, who does not have their pulse, did not have their hands on the pulse of the constituency that they need. And listen, I'm going to be honest with you. Every 4 years, we can't come into the room and think everybody going to vote.
Mm-hmm.
We gotta start having a concerted effort on the ground, on the local levels and the state levels, and start building those coalitions so that we can get the momentum leading up to the 2028 election. And the key is, if you have Latinos and you have other groups who don't feel that they're being heard,
mm-hmm.
anybody that shows them attention, they're going to go to.
You're absolutely correct.
And I must, yes. and I must yes. give credit, and I hate to do this, I must give credit to the Republican Party, because they heard them when they said, "What about us?" And the Democratic Party said, "We know we got y'all. Y'all cool. Y'all know where we stand from. We know we with you. We ain't got to come see about you, because you're going to vote for us anyway." And somebody said, "No, let me address your needs. Let me talk to you about abortion." And because they understood the Latinos are mainly, for the most part, Catholic.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
They understood where they stood from a religious standpoint. And they started talking to their local leaders, their priests and other people, and started saying, "Listen, this is where we stand. And this is what we're going to do. Can we count on you to get our word out?"
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing was the whole thing around other issues, economics, the border,
mm-hmm.
immigrants, all of those things. And they hit on every single point that was a trigger point or a talking point for those who felt left out by the Democratic Party. That's why there was a red wave, because they talked to them about their fears. They mm-hmm. stirred up some of their fears, too.
Yeah.
But you know what they did a good job at? They did a good job at saying, "I hear you, and I'm going to try to fix it."
Okay, I know you're Gary Chimon. So let me just a quick observation here to add to what you're saying. You're absolutely correct. I remember saying to my wife a couple of weeks before the election, two concerns I had. Number one, Bucks County. When I saw that long line on the news in Bucks County, I grew up in Chester. I grew up in Chester, PA, Delaware County, and I know Bucks at one time was Republican, and it switched to blue. It go back and forth. Something in my spirit said, "This is not going to be good on election day," and she lost Bucks County. That's the first thing. The second thing, I lost my train of thought here. We lost Bucks County, man. It was something powerful that you said in regards to the Latinx community, and I'm back off because I just really lost my train of thought here. Someone says, "Yo, is something going on with his mind?" Nah, man, I'm battling exhaustion from a campaign. Oh, no, I know what it was. So it was Bucks County, right? But then the next thing I was concerned, I told my wife, I said, "Here's my concern," and it chimes into what you said, Johnson. Woman's right to choose, woman right to choose, woman right to choose, woman right to choose. That's all we kept hearing. Woman right to choose, woman right to choose. And I don't have a problem with that. A woman's right to choose, a woman's right to choose. And I said to my wife, I says, "Okay, they're trying to win this election off the women's vote. She's not saying much about men. She's not saying much about bread and butter issues, right? And so if you're trying to win this women's right to choose, women's right to choose, women's right to choose, what you're saying is the other constituencies, that the issues of your other constituencies doesn't matter. Because you are trying to win off of one issue initiative, a woman's right to choose." Now, I'm a Christian, right? And whether I may be against abortion, right? But I still believe that a person should have a right to choose. I don't believe in legislating my beliefs. You follow me? And maybe say, "Oh, Rev, you're hypocritical. Call me what you want." I don't believe in legislating my beliefs. I'm just going to be very candid with you. So I just want to put that as a disclaimer here. I'm not saying that there should be a ban, a law, or anything like that. No, God gives us choices. Period. And I like the way you put it in one of our shows, I think about 3 or 4 weeks ago. You said, "I'm pro-life." You know, we're talking about, when somebody got arrested. You says, "I'm pro-life. So I believe that if you commit a crime, you should get life in jail." Pro-life. I remember that. I don't believe in legislating my beliefs. That's just the bottom line. But it was woman's right to choose, woman's right to choose, woman's right to choose. And they did not handle the economy. They didn't handle that effectively.
Not at all.
Because
not at all.
The economy was jacked up because of COVID, because dude fumbled the ball. And they didn't call it for what it was. Inflation was nothing but a penalty from the stimmy checks that was given out. And if you want to, you know, oh, well, there's an increase in food prices. Let me tell y'all something. I worked in the food industry. There's something called food cost markup. So what happens here is you get a product and you mark it up 45 and 50% higher so that you can get a higher return off the revenue. That's in the restaurant. I can't speak for the markets. So when the food start going up, like case in point, you should never pay $15 for a garden salad. Never pay $15 for a garden salad when the cost to make that one plate of garden salad is really less than a dollar. So if they're charging you $15 for a garden salad, trust me, they're making $14 off of it. Case in point, then, Bishop, I know I'm talking too much here. They talk about, oh, the prices is high, price is high. Did you ever question how much money the restaurants lose when they give you free refills? They don't lose it because when they give you a 16-ounce soda, that soda only costs maybe about 25 cents a cup. They can give you a free refill because the profit margin is built into the food cost markup. But they did not handle the economy and the price rising, you know, with food and everything. They dropped the ball. Bishop, let me do a woosha moment. Blame it on the cat. Blame it on my coffee. Yeah, I just finished drinking my coffee.
Nah, the biggest thing is the being out of touch.
Mm-hmm.
That's the bottom line. When you're out of touch, you're in conversations that is beyond. I think the points that the Democrats were focusing on was points that they were passionate about. However, did not bring out the votes. The bottom line. You can have a passion behind something, but you didn't address the issues that America was dealing with. And that's the bottom line. Economy is something that, a lot of Black African-American men of color, what have you, were looking at their pockets.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's economy, and then the reality of it, and people don't want to really say anything about this, but you have someone, like it or don't like it, you know, as a person that has been in the office and is a veteran in this area when it comes to a vet, I'm talking about as far as, you know, running and losing and winning and running and losing, what have you. And Donald Trump, experience-wise, had the experience. And Kamala, in that regard, based on being in this type of arena, did not have an experience, of running. But the one thing that was said, and I think that's important when you look at, you know, where do we, you know, what do we do? You know, one thing I have, you have to have a plan of being in touch with what we're dealing with, checking the boxes to say, hey, I do know that there are some things that we need to address. Mm-hmm. And you address those issues. Grassroots organization is so important. Strengthening local chapters, as mentioned, is important. And community engagement and empowering volunteers to come out and to help, getting with the faith-based organizations and really in touch and in tune with it. And what we saw, you know, and again, I said, like it or not, those are the areas that the Republican Party started really dealing with. They were getting with people that was attached to great parties, larger parties, grassroots. Now you would now who would think to get, you know, an MMA president? That's grassroots. If that's not grassroots, I don't know what is.
Mm-hmm.
To be a part of something. And I just know that the messaging that Democrats need to have needs to be pointed, and they need to develop a clear message, and that's one thing that was not, and a message that's reliable, something that's in touch and in tune with what's going on, and the community forums that you mentioned about, Dr. Weathers, when it comes to the faith-based organizations, the pastors, things like, you can't pick and choose.
No.
You know, and you can't pick and choose, you know, and that's the problem. They're picking and choosing and making, and they're doing the very thing that they're saying is happening to them. They're overlooking, you know, the boots on the ground person that's serving.
Hey Bishop,
and they believe that they need to. Yes,
I was like, there's a question from Pastor Andrew James, but you said something. And only got five. I want to hit on this. God, I wish I had more time. You can't pick. So when I was asking someone about surrogates, right? I said to someone, I was like, okay, I'm working on this campaign. I was like, I haven't gotten a surrogate in my church as of yet. This is like going into the last campaign. And one person said to me, well, you know, some of the surrogates, they want to come to a church that has more than 100 people. And I said, that's amazing. I said, because they want a surrogate that want to come to a church that has more than 100 people. And I may have less than 100, but my impact is, I said, but I'm able to reach more. So you got a person who has less than 100, but yet he's the ones directing you how to get to the faith community throughout the whole entire state. Answer me that. That doesn't make any sense to me. So Andrew James, we're going to pick up this on podcast next Friday. I'm organizing it. Let's put this on the map for next Friday, because there's a lot I got to say. I just don't have much time. Andrew James, Pastor Andrew James said, question, did they really do a good job or did the Dems do a poor job? Trump got 3 million less votes. Dems were missing 16 million votes. The campaign was indeed limited. Rev, you are right. They didn't do enough to win. However, you can't treat people bad and expect good. It sounds like the campaign was the same, treating people bad and looking over important voices to answer to big names. This is what you get. He also says, we also cannot ignore the fact that America was not going to vote for a black woman. That's too much progress, too fast. Any white man would have beat Trump. Woo! Let's close out with this. And let's segue into podcast next Friday. We'll still do the radio show, right? But let's do the podcast, and we'll meet to really talk about the components of it. We need to pre-record it, we need to do it live, etc. So when I was brought on as a consultant and nice person, so I'm gonna kick it like the way it needs to be kicked. And the person says, well, you know, the goal for Sharif Street, and shout out to Sharif Street, Senator Sharif Street, because if it wasn't for him, I wouldn't have gotten this opportunity, right? And you can't put all of this blame on him as well. And I know that some are trying to, but you can't put all of this blame on him as well. And so he thought that once they brought me on, I would do the faith piece, right? In conjunction with the campaign, I still would be Pennsylvania Democrat, and I would answer to the person, et cetera. We just work in harmony. It didn't work out like that. Me and person didn't have a visual, didn't work out like that. And so when I get on, it was like, oh, well, I asked Pastor so-and-so, and he and I are very cool, because he has large numbers. And he pulled me to the side and says, Weathers, listen, I'm a back away. There's no need for both of us to be on because, you know, I know your work. I know what you do. It's going to be button of his. He was like, you know, I'm going to step aside. So he stepped aside, and then it was like, then she went and got, I won't say she, but she said, oh, by the way, well, this person is not doing it, but I've asked this person to get on. I kind of went ballistic because I'm thinking I'm supposed to do this, right? But I still want this person to be on. It's a pastor with a big name. And I says, oh, I get it now. You want somebody with a church that has a big congregation. So this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to step aside because you want the prominent person, right? Because that's the way it came across. You want the prominent person, but that prominent person don't have the contacts that I have. And I'm going to be very candid with you. And I was supposed to help, like, with put contact lists together. I didn't do it. And it wasn't that I was mad, because my attitude was, if you want the prominent person to do it, then let the prominent person create your contact list. When it's all said and done, things come back full circle. Let's unplug this. Let's create unplug. Conversation unplug. We got some dark days coming. Robert F. Kennedy already said, once inaugurated, he's going to gut the Food and Drug Administration. He's already said it. I think about my granddaughters
And I think about all the Dr. King and Medgar Evers and Goodman, Cheney, and Swern, I think that's the right name, given their lives. I think about them. And I want to end on this. I know we got 1 minute. I went and see my dad yesterday, and you know, my dad has his challenges and everything. And I said to my dad, just give me just what extra minute. I said to my dad, I said, Dad, I sat by his bed. I said, we worked hard to get Kamala in. I'm going to cry at this. I said, we worked hard to get her in, and we didn't get her in. My dad said, son, you're going to have to accept the outcome. He said, son, you can play by the rules, but you still won't get the desired result. And this is where I close out and the tears come to my eyes. He said, son, you will smile again. And that's how I'll end the show today. We will smile again. Thank you for listening to Conversation Unplugged. As we unplug, we'll plug back in next week. Take care and God bless.